Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chamber Channel's Five Questions podcast. This is the place where we take a deep dive with industry leaders for an inside look at their world and how they can make a difference in yours. Living next to the ocean has plenty of perks, but also some hidden challenges. In our studio today is the General Manager of Hilton Head PSD, Pete Nardi. He's here to talk about how they're mitigating saltwater intrusion and the recent EPA ruling on forever chemicals in our drinking water. Let's listen. So, Pete, there's a lot of focus right now on coastal water, coastal flooding. I was just in Charleston this week and downtown flooded while I was there. There's so much going on in terms of what's happening. And that impacts us at a local level, too, in terms of saltwater intrusion, all the things that we have to look out for. What are some of the things that we're doing locally to prevent that from happening and to make sure that what we're drinking is safe?
So, you know, Hilton Head, when you talk about the tap water, there's been really decades now of response related to this phenomenon of saltwater intrusion. And the saltwater intrusion is, you know, for us, it's a naturally occurring phenomenon, but it's also been man-made. And, you know, the science behind it is that it's something that's been occurring for a long time. They first noticed it, you know, early 1900s, Parris Island. And a lot of intensive pumping of the freshwater part of the aquifer, the groundwater, especially Savannah, Georgia region, a lot of intense industrial usage. So over time, you've had kind of a flipping of the freshwater resource here for us on the island. What had been freshwater, and you're seeing the saltwater get into it, makes it where you can't have it as public drinking water supply. So a lot of different approaches. One, and the big one here on the island, is reverse osmosis treatment of brackish groundwater.
Huh.
So it's not the tap water that got salty. It's brackish groundwater that already was partly salty, going deeper into the aquifer. And we're pumping that, and then we're treating it with RO, reverse osmosis, which is really, it's a tightly wound nylon membrane that you're pushing the brackish water through. You're getting the fresh water on the other side of it. It's really the same process that if you're drinking Dasani or Aquafina, even a lot of soft drinks and things like that, same process that is used in the manufacturing of those kind of bottled drinks. Something that the U.S. Navy really kind of pioneered. It's how they did freshwater on ships and things like that. So big effort on RO treatment here on the island. We use 600-foot deep source groundwater, brackish groundwater. We treat it with RO. On the south end, they go even deeper, 3,000-some feet deep.
Wow.
But also brackish and running it through reverse osmosis. We're hanging on to some freshwater wells still. We do a lot of monitoring of the groundwater, a lot of monitoring of where is the intrusion occurring? Where do we think it might happen next? And that's with monitoring wells as well as using our own production wells. Two other really important things. We take treated drinking water in the winter months when our demand is lower. We take it and we inject it into the brackish part of the aquifer, and we store treated drinking water using the aquifer itself.
Interesting.
It's a technique called aquifer storage and recovery. So you're using that aquifer itself, using the groundwater as the storage zone of already treated drinking water. The well that we have, it's in Hilton Head Plantation at Royal James Drive there. Using that well, we can store 260 million gallons of treated drinking water underground during the winter. So like for perspective, if you drive around the island and you see like a concrete water storage tank, that's like at a maximum holding 2 million gallons. So it's given us an amount of storage that is impossible to build above ground.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's called ASR for short, Aquifer Storage and Recovery. Ours is actually written up in a UNESCO book about examples of successful managed aquifer programs worldwide.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yep, yep. So we do that. We also, you know, late 90s, when saltwater intrusion really started to impact the drinking water supply here, Hilton Head PSD, Broad Creek PSD, so the North and Mid Island areas, they made a decision to go to the mainland for a portion of our drinking water. So we have a drinking water transmission pipeline that connects us to the mainland utility, Beaufort Jasper Water and Sewer Authority. And so through that pipeline, the two utilities here on Hilton Head, we're wholesale customers of the mainland utility. And we're buying treated drinking water through that pipeline. That's a relatively lower percentage of our supply. It's our most expensive source. They're getting up around $2.50 per 1,000 gallons for the utility to buy it from the mainland. When we're using our own reverse osmosis, we're making that water for about $1 per 1,000 gallons.
Wow.
So you're getting a really great high quality source. You're getting it less expensively.
Let's talk a little bit about the journey. Let's talk about this, because I don't think most people really get it. It's just something you take for granted, right? I'm getting a glass of water in the morning to take my vitamins. I'm brushing my teeth at night, and what I'm drinking is safe. What journey does that make?
Mm. So, you know, you're starting with source. That's a thing I think a lot of times we kind of overlook. You know, there's two different things. There's source and there's supply.
Mm-hmm.
You know, water tower or that ASR well, that's a supply of water. You got to start with the source first.
Go a little bit deeper, literally and figuratively.
Right. So what is your source going to be? When I'm talking about our groundwater, okay, that's water that is underground. It's encased in limestone fissures. It's a limestone aquifer, a layered aquifer. And the water is down in the fissures of this limestone. So, you know, you're starting with your pumping of that and then your treatment of it. So RO is part of the treatment. There's also always chlorine treatment of drinking water, and it's nationwide. So we use liquid chlorine, actually, and we're treating the drinking water with that. We do that at the reverse osmosis plant. We also do that even when we're still using the freshwater wells. You have to have a little bit of chlorine treatment of that water as well. And then, you know, you're out in your distribution system. It is miles and miles of
making
pipes.
Its way to your sink.
Right. You know, you got to start with the source. There's no point in pumping it if I can't have it at 3 o'clock in the morning when I'm turning the faucet on. Right. So you have to maintain these, you know, complex distribution systems for our tap water. And that's pipes, it's pumps, it's meters, it's valves, it's hydrants, it's all that stuff.
Gets to my glass.
Yep. And it is all these systems, you know, I do think we can kind of take for granted and think, well, things are getting so automated and this and that. Really, none of it happens without the men and women that work at these public utilities that are monitoring the water, treating the water, fixing pipes and pumps and hydrants and things like that.
We're so fortunate in this country. We forget about that we literally can go to a tap at 3 o'clock in the morning and turn it on. And there are so many other places around the world that don't have that luxury.
That is so true. I think the stats are that, like, in the developing world, if you will, you still see, I think it's something like 5,000 some deaths per day that are attributable to poor water quality. Which is something like in North America, we take for granted because we've developed these systems. And it's also one of the hardest things to export because they are expensive and they come at, you know, they're complex and they come with a lot of capital investment in them and ongoing investment in them. And not every place, you can't export that every place, you know.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that safety. You know, the EPA recently issued a ruling restricting the level of certain forever chemicals in drinking water. How do you make sure it's safe? There's lots of no shortage of news going around about forever chemicals or fluoride or whatever. How do you make sure it's safe?
So, you know, the EPA is handing down, I think right now there's over 150 primary drinking water regulations. So all public utilities are monitoring for those contaminants. And that is a daily routine monitoring. Like at Hilton at PSD, we employ a water quality chemist. It's a full-time laboratory. You have to have things like that. PFAS, PFOS, mm-hmm. these new, you know, emerging contaminants is mm-hmm. a thing, right? So PFAS are forever chemicals. They're legacy chemicals. Many of them have been banned and they're not in production anymore. They're not used in manufacturing. Many of them still exist. They're in the shampoo we use. They're in the chocolate cake that we eat. They're in our clothing, things like that. EPA, you know, this week they've come out with a regulation that they want utilities to meet a contaminant level of PFAS within the next 5 years. So it's going to be a phased in kind of thing. There are known contaminant sources of PFAS. And so if you have a utility that has a source that you know has been contaminated by it via manufacturing, via firefighting foam and things like that, those utilities are having to, you know, stand up their treatment techniques to remove it. Granular activated carbon is a method that's being used. There's some new foam actually methods that are going to be used to remove PFAS. RO, reverse mm-hmm. osmosis, we're talking about, is a leading treatment technology for PFAS.
Well, let's be frank here too. The PFAS is, that's something that happens with bottled water as well. I mean, there are issues with bottled water with that too. So
yes, and you know, bottled water industry is not regulated to the extent that your tap water is.
Interesting.
So that's something to think about. And so again, though, too, it starts with source. So on Hilton Head here, monitoring our groundwater for PFAS, we don't have any. We're showing no PFAS. The EPA is proposing an initial five that they want regulated. They were legacy PFAS. We monitor for over 30, and we're not seeing it in the groundwater to
That's
begin
great.
With.
That's
yeah,
great.
We're not seeing it in the brackish source. We're not seeing it in the fresh source. And then you're also, you know, you're layering on that reverse osmosis treatment. The mainland, the wholesale water purchased from the mainland, you know, part of that water is drawn from the Savannah River. So you can have a PFAS level in that water. There's been discharge into the Savannah River. Beaufort Jasper is a state-of-the-art utility. They're treating, but you can see some PFAS in that source. So in a case like big surface water utility like Beaufort Jasper, they're going to be standing up a PFAS removal project. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a very, very expensive project. And they're not seeing high levels of PFAS, but they're going to probably see enough to where they will have to have some type of treatment in place within the next 5 years.
And that's on the mainland. That's
on the mainland.
Wow.
Yep. But, you know, when you're using a portion of that supply, that's going to be part of the cost of service that's being provided over here on the island. So that's going to potentially affect rates over here on the island. It's going to affect our wholesale rates that we're buying water at from them.
I think you said something interesting when you talked about saltwater intrusion. This is not new. I think sometimes the media would like to express that, oh, this is new and it's happening because of all these other reasons, but it's not actually something, like you said, that's been happening since the early 1900s.
Yeah. Yep. And like I say, it's a lot of different, I like to say, like, it comes at us from all angles. What we notice, what it does is, The pressure in the upper part of the aquifer, in that fresh part, was removed. And that's what allowed, in a lot of cases, that's what allowed the salt to come in. But what we see it do is, it's called pluming. It's coming up into that freshwater source and pluming out. And if your well is near that plume, is when you start to see the levels of the salt, you know, increase in your well.
Right.
And salt water is actually a secondary contaminant for the EPA, you know, you could continue to put like a high level of it, you know, regulatory wise, you could continue to use it, but your utilities here and most utilities, we don't consider that acceptable as public drinking water supply.
Right. So it's a different, what do you wish people knew about their water?
You know, hopefully like the value that you're getting, a gallon of Hilton Head PSD tap water and sewer, right? We're a water and sewer utility. A gallon of that is a fraction of a penny. If you're buying it by the gallon, it costs literally a fraction of a penny. And so when you think about all the other things we buy every single day or use every single day by the gallon, the astronomical difference, and it's not life-sustaining or economy-sustaining stuff like tap water and sewer. It's a bottle of cologne or, you know, I think I was doing a thing of a bottle of Billie Eilish's. If you bought a gallon of Billie Eilish's perfume, mm-hmm. that'd be like $10,000, you know, but your tap water is so. And I do think, you know, that's part of the catch-22 of it, right? Because it's undervalued. Mm-hmm. It's an undervalued commodity. And so people mm-hmm. kind of, well, my sprinkler sprays water on my asphalt and on the concrete because it isn't valuable enough.
Right. Well, and some people also live in places, even in the U.S., that it's rationed for, you know, the commodity is valued because it's a little bit more difficult to get.
That's right. I mean, we're, you know, on the East Coast here in general, we're really fortunate that, as we've been talking about, we're selecting based on the economies of some of the different sources. Mm-hmm. And we don't face water scarcity here. We're choosing things based on what's the economics of it, of procuring it and treating it. And you're right. I mean, in other areas, there are no choices.
Right.
We're really interested. I'm a part of a statewide association where we're working on trying to open up the toolbox more related to advanced treated recycled water. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of the coolest things that's done on Hilton Head. And we really were pioneers of Sea Pines and Charles Fraser and the guys were pioneers of this, is the use of advanced treated recycled water for irrigation.
Right.
Right. That is how we irrigate golf on Hilton Head. A lot of people think, oh, the golf industry is using all of our water. No, they're using the treated recycled water from the municipal wastewater treatment. And they have done that for decades and decades. That's all they use. So we were kind of pioneers of it. But what we do, and when golf doesn't need it, we sustain pre-existing wetland habitats with it. Mm-hmm. So Hilton Head PSD, we put it into the Whooping Crane Pond Conservancy. South Island puts it into the conservancies in Sea Pines. And you're sustaining these really cool natural wetland habitats using the recycled water. That if we weren't doing that, the biologists have told us we would have already, we'd see those habitats like converting more to like upland wood, like loblolly kind of forest. But instead, you've got these incredible wildlife and biological habitats because you're sustaining them with the reclaimed water, the recycled water program. But that is only like scratching the surface of what we could be doing with advanced treated recycled water. And like talking about places that have water scarcity. They're starting to look at and starting to do, go back to the reverse osmosis treatment, that membrane treatment, take the advanced treated recycled water, put it through the membranes, and you can start to use it for potable water reasons, possibly direct potable water. Here on Hilton Head, we might have an opportunity, I think, to look at what you call indirect potable reuse, meaning treat the recycled water and maybe be allowed to use it to try to fight saltwater intrusion. This is done in other places in North America. California has done this, where you actually could try to inject it and use it to stem the saltwater intrusion front. Maybe try to eventually freshen, you know, things that you've lost. I think that's a really exciting thing that it's going to take a long time. It's going to take a while. We're working with the state right now on the regulatory framework. What would that look like? But we also want to work on that public perception, you know, because that's going to be key, having public support for these kind of innovative projects. And there's a lot of work to be done, but it's happening around the country. Florida's been doing it. We're reaching out and talking to agriculture about it. You know, there's crops that can be grown with it, all kinds of different uses. We're only just scratching the surface, but Hilton Head has the track record of kind of being a leader in this, especially in our state.
Well, once again, Hilton Head Island fulfills its legacy, really, of environmental sensitivity. Yeah. So you heard it here first. I think we all learned a little bit more about our drinking water than we knew before. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. The podcast continues to grow and never miss an episode of our Five Questions podcast by subscribing to the Chamber Channel on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take a moment to download, subscribe, and leave us a review. It helps us reach more people.